You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, what a crazy election night last night was. I'll tell you what, I am sleep deprived staying up with you and watching the election results.
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm glad it's over.
That's why we're drinking champagne tonight. Not necessarily because of huge wins, but because it's over.
Yes, and we're glad that it's over because this is a stressful season. It was stressful, I think, for the whole country.
Well, you know, everybody has said that there has never been a voter turnout like this one, clearly exceeding any other midterm voter turnout. And I know as long as you and I have been voting,
right,
which is many years, getting right up there with the 2016 election of Donald Trump. That kind of turnout, just amazing. And I know you and I, we phoned all of our kids to make sure that they had gone out and vote.
And you know what? I am proud to say that they did.
Right.
And, you know, we really didn't have to bug them about it. So,
well, you know, even our police officer's son, Brian, who's actually in training today, you know, I called him up during his lunch break and I said, hey, I want to make sure that you get out there and vote. And he goes, don't worry about that, Dad. I already voted.
Well, that's good. Yep. And yes, you know, I was going to threaten our daughter-in-law that if she didn't vote today, that she couldn't be part of the family. But she let me know that
early.
She had voted already.
She got in early,
that was
so
good.
Yeah,
I'm adamant that they partake in our country.
Well, it is probably the greatest demonstration of freedom that Americans have. I mean, this is, you know, people talk about freedom, but of course you and I know that in many countries of the world, there is no such freedom and they have no voting rights. So to be able to have the privilege of being an American and the privilege of voting in a free nation is, like I said, I think it's the most important thing as far as a responsibility that a citizen can do in the United States.
Well, and I do see it as a responsibility. It's a privilege, but I also see it as a responsibility. But you know, the crazy thing about this election that I noticed over any other election that I think I've ever watched was how close these races were. The races were just razor thin margins. They were up and down and back and forth. And it wasn't, in a lot of situations, it wasn't clear winners for a very long time.
Right. And you know, I'd use the term nail biters because we're sitting on the couch and we're watching these returns and I'm almost biting my nails because I'm hanging on to the edge of the couch. I mean, minute by minute, things would change. And we're talking about sometimes, you know, by tenths of percent, not just percents, but tenths of percents.
Right. Well, and a good example was, because we live in Texas, we were very, very interested in the Beto O'Rourke
and Ted Cruz.
Right. Election. And when the results started coming in, it showed Beto O'Rourke ahead by 19%. And I was, you know, I was, taking a deep breath there.
And you know what? And that's a great example of something that I want to talk to you about. And that is, you know, that Ted Cruz and President Trump, since the election, had a very contentious relationship, right? I remember when President Trump, you know, of course, he had a nickname for everybody.
Right.
But you remember he would refer to Senator Cruz as Lion Ted.
Lion
right,
Ted.
Which totally ticked off Ted Cruz. And as a result, Ted Cruz paid the president, at that time, it wasn't even president-elect, it was at the convention, he would not even support him. I mean, he went out and gave a lengthy speech, but didn't even support the president of the United States. Well, Donald Trump at that time, as the sole you know, candidate left for president of the United States. And I will tell you what, just my personal opinion, I want to hear what you've got to say, but I think that really hurt Ted Cruz.
Well, that may have hurt Ted Cruz. You know, they have made up, and the president did come out to Texas, had a huge, overwhelming, over 100,000 people wanted tickets to see him. But what I noticed just as a Texan is Beto O'Rourke had so much more money than Ted Cruz.
And almost $100 million, yeah, for God's sakes. Who gets that kind of money?
Every sign, every commercial was Beto O'Rourke. So this election in Texas was much closer than I'm comfortable with. But because of the money difference, I think that that was a big deal. And, you know, I mean, Ted Cruz is not your most... He's not a real warm kind of
candidate. He's not the most affable candidate that you're going to meet.
Yeah, so he doesn't have that charm that a lot of people look for.
Right.
And Beto O'Rourke does have some charm.
Well, he's young, he's good looking,
yeah.
He's extremely, you know, progressive. He's way off to the left. I mean, completely anti-law enforcement, you know, had a criminal record, lied about the circumstances of his DUI injury arrest, which didn't set well with me. I mean, at least tell the truth, for God's sakes. You make a mistake and take ownership for it. You know, don't lie and use subterfuge to try to get around your criminal history. It was so funny because I was so curious about it that I think I told you I looked up the crime report and actually read the officer's statements, and there was absolutely no doubt about O'Rourke lying on the campaign trail. But, you know, that all of that aside, I'll tell you what, I want to hear what you have to say. But, you know, you mentioned the fact that Donald Trump came all the way out to Texas and stumped on the campaign trail for Ted Cruz. And as a matter of fact, I think the one that they had in Texas, which was that the one in Houston?
Yes,
was the one
uh-huh.
in Houston. I said they should have held it at the Dallas, what is that, the AT&T Arena?
Yeah, that's
that
huge.
Holds like 90,000 people in it.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, 100,000 people bought tickets, but they had the arena in Houston filled with about 18,000 people, with tens of thousands of people outside watching the big, you know, giant screen TVs. But if it had, my point is, not to belabor it, but my point is, sweetheart, I don't think that Ted Cruz would have won this election had Donald Trump not come over here and, you know, got the base all riled up to get out the vote for him.
Well, I think that that's possible. I'm surprised how close it was. But some other races that I found really, really interesting in Florida. So we had Gillum went down in defeat to Ron DeSantis,
the former Tallahassee mayor. And you want to talk about a progressive, very anti-law enforcement person. Very anti-Trump, talked about impeaching Donald Trump if he got into office. And that was I think that was an upset victory for Ron DeSantis.
I think so, too. This was a very, very close race as well. So, again, one that went back and forth, and you're watching, and you just don't know what's going to happen on it. So, you know, it ended up being very, very close, but it ended up that Ron DeSantis did win.
And he'll be the governor-elect.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that.
But, you know, that's another guy that Donald Trump carried on his back and came out and stumped for him in Florida, which is a tough area because Florida has changed so much.
Right.
Demographically and, you know, moving those congressional districts around and everything like that. And, you know, speaking of the elections in Florida and the problems with voting, did you see where they passed the legislation to allow felons to vote in the state of Florida?
Right. Well, speaking of a game changer there, Amendment 4, that was to amend the state constitution to restore voting rights of felons after they've completed their sentence, with the exception of people convicted of murder or sex crimes. So they have about 1.6 million felons in that category in Florida. That is a game changer.
It is, because those people, no way, no how, are those people going to vote Republican or vote conservative. And, you know, as an old law enforcement dog, I will tell you that one of the behavior modifications, you know, to tell people, you know, you don't want to go out there and be committing crimes and felons, is that you're going to lose your voting rights. Well, that's completely off the table now.
Well, and I can't figure out why people don't understand this and why they, you know, everybody wants to be nice these days. So they want to be the, you know, kumbaya, nice people. And you can't always be nice. Sometimes you have to put your foot down and say no. And this is not a good direction for the country. This is why the country is in some trouble, because we have done this in so many situations. We've done it in the colleges. We've done it in workplaces. We've done it with, you know, let's let these people be this way and let's let those people be that way. And let's, you know, everybody, well, let's let all the immigrants in and let's do,
and
you know,
let's
do all
let
these
them
nice
all vote.
Things.
Well, can you imagine, Linda? Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but can you imagine what would have happened in this election in Texas if Governor Abbott, God bless him, and I'm glad he's, you know, governor again.
Yes.
But if Governor Abbott hadn't put his foot down and demanded voter identification, right? Can you imagine what would have happened just allowing illegal aliens or just anybody to come in and vote like they did in California?
Well, sure.
Which is one of the reasons we escaped the state of California and all of their craziness.
Right. Well, it would have been crazy, and I respect them for the way that they handled their voting in the state of Texas, and I think the entire country should emulate it. There's no reason in the world not to. But, you know, some other races that I thought were really interesting, I don't know who you thought. I was watching some of these, you know, so we have in Florida, again, Rick Scott was over Bill Nelson.
And you know what? I was so happy to see that, and that was a little bit of a nail biter as well. But you know, Rick Scott has done such a phenomenal job for the state of Florida as governor. When you think of all the unfortunate acts of God, like the hurricanes and the storms, and the horrible destruction, including that, you know, that giant hurricane that went through there last month when I happened to be in Florida, got out of there just before that darn thing hit by a day. And, you know, Rick Scott's in there, and I always see that guy with his shirt sleeves rolled up and getting right in the middle. I think he's a hell of a leader, and I was so happy to see him make the transition from governor to the Senate.
Well, two races really had my interest, and that was, of course, our existing senators, Heidi Heitkamp and Claire McCaskill, both of whom lost their elections, and they were the Senate incumbents.
Well, you know, Karen McCaskill from Missouri, and you know, I do a lot of work in the state of Missouri. I was really happy to see her, you know, lose that election. So, you know.
Yeah, that was good. And that was another one that went back and forth and back and forth. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And for the longest time, it looked like Josh Hawley had no chance. And all of a sudden, he popped out over in the numbers and he held and he won that election. And I think, you know, he's a young man. I think he's going to make a difference in the Senate. And then, you know, we also had Heidi Heitkamp, who lost to Kramer. And again, you know, these are people that went down kind of through the Kavanaugh hearings. I think that really was the last straw for them.
You know, in the people that we talk to and the people that we watch on television where they're doing interviews with man on the street, I don't think maybe the Democrats, after this is all done, they're going to have a come to Jesus meeting with themselves and see that what they did to Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh did not sit well with the American people. I'll tell you what, as I said before, when we talked about this on a couple of occasions, it was a clear violation of his civil rights, due process, presumption of innocence. They basically railroaded this guy. And that Dr. Ford, the accuser, now the United States Department of Justice, I think, is going to look at her, because I think there's something like 45 allegations of dealing with collusion with the Democrat Democratic Party for her coming up and making false sexual assault allegations against, Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh.
Yeah, well, that mess is going to last for a while. Just a couple other things that I thought were interesting in the election. We knew that Ocasio-Cortez was going to win because she really had no competition.
Correct.
And so she gained her House seat, and she will now be the youngest woman to have been elected to the House.
Well, and I'll tell you what, she is a person that I have to just say it. She's dumb. All right. She's dumb. She is uneducated about geopolitics. She's uneducated about civil rights. She's uneducated about civics in the United States. And for that woman to have won that election, I'm gonna badmouth the Republican in this. He allowed her, by just being negligent and not taking care of business in his district, he allowed Ocasio-Cortez to come in there and basically steal a seat from him.
Right, he got way too comfy.
You know the one I want to talk about because I just like her so much, and that's Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee defeating the challenger Phil Bredesen. And I was just really, really happy to see that. I think she's a lovely person, and she's 100% behind the President of the United States.
Well, I was really happy to see that, too. And she is the first woman and governor ever in Tennessee.
That's true.
And Taylor Swift, I'm so sorry, but she won.
Well, and that just shows you that, Hollywood celebrities don't really bring home the bacon.
No.
With respect to votes.
No, because the way that people like you and I think is that they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, they live in a bubble. I mean, they're so insulated, and they come out and they say the most outrageous and uneducated, uninformed things. And I think it comes back to not only bite them and embarrass them, but it embarrasses the candidates. So it's really, if you're a candidate and you want to have somebody like Taylor Swift or some other celebrity come in and stump for you, that can be a real, high-risk situation.
Right, exactly. Well, can I refill your champagne?
I'll have just one more.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, I think that we could talk about this election for days, but the big news about this election to me is that we, the Republicans, lost the House. And I know that it was predicted that we would lose the House, and we did. It definitely was not a blue wave, but still, that still hurts. And I think now we're going to have, what they say is that we're going to have the Democrats wanting to spend all their time doing investigations. And I'm hoping that that's not true. I'm hoping that the new people that come in have a new outlook and are willing to be more bipartisan and work together. I don't know if that's going to be true. It was interesting to see Nancy Pelosi gloating over the win back of the House, but I don't know that she's going to get to be the Speaker.
Well, I don't know either. I think there's something like 40 congresspeople that are Democrats that have already kind of signed a list saying that they are not going to support her as Speaker of the House. But, you know, I listen to the rhetoric, and that's what I call pretty much most politicians when they open their mouths. It's rhetoric. And she talks about, oh, this is going to be a time to bring Americans together and to unify us. And, you know, to me, it's very empty because they haven't done any of that. They have obstructed. And the thing that bothers me about this, where they've retaken the House, is I just see a significant amount of obstructionism that's going to come from them. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I think it's going to be more obstruction and preventing this country to move forward with President Trump's economic plan and to get us, you know, to keep us in that strong position. In other words, keeping America great. We don't have to make America great again. The Trump administration and everything that he and the people in his administration have been doing have, you know, got us back on track to show the world that America is, in fact, a great country. Whether we're going to be able to maintain that greatness is really up to the Democrats and the Rhino Republicans.
Yeah, and I think that this might affect the whole health care debate between the House and Senate. So that I see that as a problem. I think that President Trump is going to find a way to go around this. And like we say, we don't know who the speaker is truly going to be. I know that Nancy Pelosi wields a lot of power, but I also know that there's a lot of people dissatisfied with her and they want something new and fresh. So we're going to have to see where that goes. It definitely was not the blue wave that they were talking about.
I agree.
The good news is that not only did we keep the Senate, but we gained seats in the Senate.
Correct.
So the Republicans have more seats in the Senate than they had. The Democrats have more seats in the House than they had. So, you know, all in all, I think it was an okay election as far as what could have been. And I'm not too unhappy. I don't think the president's too unhappy with it. I think he's going to just figure out his way to work around the obstructions like he always does. And we will, you know, proceed from there.
Well, you know, I want to just keep it on this tact, but I want to change the political positions for a minute and just talk about the fact that the Republicans lost five governorships during this midterm election, Illinois, Kansas, Maine, Michigan, and New Mexico. Now, governors don't play a major role. Of course, we know it's all about the House and the Senate, but it's extremely revealing.
Yes.
You know, having gone to, you know, Illinois, I do a lot of work in Illinois, and I've been to Michigan and done some work there. And also, like, you know, Wisconsin, and those states are really turning blue. I see that more and more. It's very frustrating because the Trump economic plans are exactly what those states need. And, you know, when you go blue and you change your governorship, to me, it's like pulling away from where this country is going. You know, just getting off that train that is bringing us to more prosperity, more manufacturing jobs, just tax cuts and people with more money in their pocket from the blue collar and even a little bit less than blue collar workers.
Yeah, I think that we're in for a bit of a different ride. I'm really interested to see in the next few weeks where the stock market takes this. And, you know, I think it's going to be fine. I'm really, really happy that we did get the Senate because we do have some Supreme Court justices, Ron, that are quite elderly.
Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I mean, you know,
she's
every 80, time
85.
Every time I see that woman, she's looking down at the floor. You know, seriously, no, she's bent over in her chair. She's looking over at the floor. She's 85 years old. And I think that these Supreme Court justices, when they get that old and that along in years, they really need to just step down because they're really not making the, I mean, I'm speculating a little bit, but I think the people that are really doing the decision making are their clerks, you know, and, yeah, and really not the Supreme Court justices. You got to be on top of your game. I mean, just as an expert playing an extremely minor role in the legal system, you see how hard I work, for God's sakes, on all these cases with thousands and thousands of pages of paperwork for a single case. If it wasn't for the Supreme Court clerks, I don't know where some of these justices would be. I mean, I get guys like, you know, like Kavanaugh and Roberts and you know, Clarence Thomas and Gorsuch. You know, those are young guys. And then, you know, we've got Sotomayor, you know, they're younger people. They can handle this stuff. But once you get way up into your 80s and things like that, I think your time has pretty much ended on the Supreme Court. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. And, you know, a couple other just notes that I noted in watching everything happen. Of course, Mitt Romney won his seat in Utah.
And I thought he would.
I thought he would too.
Interesting that Trump, after all of
The vitriol.
The contentiousness between the two candidates, that, you know, Trump comes in and stumps for this guy, just like he came through for Ted Cruz.
Right, exactly.
And we're going to see, I'm going to say something, because I'm not a huge fan of Mitt Romney. I want to see how he handles the success in becoming a junior senator and whether he gets in line with the president of the United States and where the president is going.
Yep. And the other thing that I noted was as soon as the polls in California closed, I mean, before a vote was counted, they called the winners there. So Gavin Newsom, Dianne Feinstein, they called those winners literally before 1% or 0.1% of the votes were in, how did they do that? But the vote count, honestly, for California was...
With Cox, between Newsom and Cox, was a lot closer
than what I would have thought.
Me too.
Also between Feinstein and her competitor were closer than what I thought that they would be. So I'm actually pretty gratified to see that. They may have lost, but they didn't lose by a ton. And I'll tell you what... Californians, get ready for a ride, because the guy that you elected there...
I think he's going to be worse than Brown.
He's worse than Brown.
I think he's going to be worse.
Much farther left. I don't know what's going to happen to that state. But what I will say is that our entire family that have moved out of that state are very happy that they did.
Well, you know, we were just there. And, you know, we spent a couple of weeks there on business. And, you know, getting stuck in that stupid traffic again and the gas prices through the roof. And we didn't talk to one single person from California that was happy with where that state was going. And, you know, one of the nail biters was the gas tax repeal, you know, which was, you know, so interesting.
Well, one other thing that I wanted to talk about... we had another, you know, kind of a first in the elections this time. So we had this businessman, J.B. Pritzker, who in Illinois defeated the governor, who was a Republican. So that was one of the pickups, right, for the Democrats.
Exactly.
This was the richest, will be the richest governor ever.
Really?
Yeah. He's the heir to the Hyatt Hotels fortune and a Gold Coast investor. He founded the Pritzker Group, which is a private investment firm. This guy's got lots of things going on. He's extremely rich.
So he's sort of the Democratic version of Donald Trump.
He actually is.
Well, yes. He's got a lot of work to do in Illinois, because I'm going to tell you what, that state has got a lot of problems.
Well, and I hope that he takes those problems on. And, you know, going back to the House for just a minute, the thing about the House that does actually end up concerning me is that now the chairs of all the committees are going to be the far left people. So where we've had, you know, the conservatives as the chairs, now because they no longer have the House, the chairs will all change to far left people. So that we're going to just have to see how that all plays out.
Well, you know, I want to play back on what you said when we were just, you know, coming back with our second glass of champagne and talking about this. And that is, just where are the Democrats going to go? This is the interesting thing. Are they going to, you know, try to work with the Republicans, reach across the aisle and deal with infrastructure, you know, deal with, you know, prison reform and criminal justice reform? Are they going to be dealing with immigration, with DACA? You know, what are they going to be doing? Or are they going to go way off into left field, get carried away by the far leftists, and go back to, you know, initiating additional investigations on President Trump and just going down that horrible road when the country wants to move forward? I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I think your working person wants to move forward and doesn't want to get mired in all that stuff. And I think now that the midterms are over, this whole Mueller investigation is going to draw to a halt.
Well, I hope it does. You're exactly right, Ron. America wants just to get back to the business of being Americans and going about their lives. They want to stop all this Mueller stuff and all these investigations and all this baloney. And we want Washington cleaned up. We want that swamp drained. And I truly believe that most Americans feel that way, whether they're Democratic or Republican. They may have difference of opinion on who's a member of that swamp. But still, we all want it to be cleaned up. And you know what? I don't want to think about it every day of my life. I do, but I don't want to. I want things to work in the way that they should work. I want the people in Washington to do their job that they have just been elected to do and not veer off into some bizarre investigation arena and waste all of our time and money and all of their time being in whatever job they are, governor, senator, house, you know, congressperson, whatever they are. Get on the job of the American people and not on all of your own agendas.
Well, you know, we're going to have a lot of junior congressmen and women and a lot of junior senators. And I hope that these newly elected politicians do not get co-opted by, you know, the corrupt elite political leaders in their respective parties, you know, that pressure them and cajole them. And quid pro quo. You know, you do this for me, I'll do that for you. If you vote in my direction, then you're going to get a seat on one of these powerful committees. I hope that they're strong enough to, you know, forego the temptation.
Well, I do as well. So we're, you know, I mean, there's a lot to be seen yet. Just glad that this portion of the election is over, because it really, it was very stressful for the country, and we can all get back on track. And just, again, hoping that the people that were elected choose to get on track, and, you know, we'll see where it takes it from there. So
Lynn, what do you think about these two elections in New Jersey and West Virginia? You know, New Jersey with Menendez, who's had nothing but problems with regards to allegations and investigations of corruption.
Well, yeah, I can't figure out why the people would go for him when, you know, he is part of that swamp, obviously, and he's had all kinds of different problems, but he pulled it through.
And you know what? He made no excuses. You know, the thing that is troubling is that, and I get the fact that New Jersey is a blue state, but for God's sakes, why would you return a person to office who's got problems with corruption?
I have no idea, Ron. I can't answer that, because that would not be what I would do.
Right.
And maybe it's just a matter of people blindly voting that Democratic ballot and not really thinking about, you know, just that they can't bring themselves to vote for a Republican. I don't understand why you would want to put somebody in there that has already proven that they have been less than honest in the job that you put them in.
Well, you know, the other one is Joe Manchin out of West Virginia, which is, you know, an impoverished state. You know, this is our coal miners, you know, and people like that. And Joe Manchin voted straight ticket with the Obama administration to get rid of the coal industry. So I'm just so bothered that Joe Manchin gets returned to office when he's done no favors to the miners in West Virginia and a lot of working people.
You know, I guess that he's done other things for the state. He has really stayed along the party line until the Justice Kavanaugh hearing. He was the one Democrat who voted for Justice Kavanaugh.
And, you know, maybe that's a saving grace for him. You know, you and I have talked extensively, you know, in our different, you know, coffee conversations about how they screwed, you know, poor, you know, Judge Kavanaugh over. So to me, Manchin voted, you know, to keep, you know, to nominate and approve the nomination of Kavanaugh is simply, to me, the ethical and right thing to do.
Well, you know, the vote was very, very close, actually. I guess in percentages it wasn't, but it's there's not a lot of voters there. So the vote was pretty close. And, you know, the thing is, Ron, in my opinion, we probably could have put a better guy up against Manchin than Morrissey, and I think that was part of the problem. But Trump went out there and tried his best. Just didn't work.
Well, you know what? And I think you raised a good point here, and that is that some of these candidates on the Republican side were sort of mediocre. And you've got, you know, when you have incumbent Democrats, you've got to have someone in your stable that is going to be, you know, have good leadership qualities and be a strong contender for office. And I think that if it hadn't been for President Trump, some of these guys would have never made it across the finish line.
Well, that's possible. But you know what? That's true on both sides. Both sides had some deficient candidates, and that always happens. So, you know, it's just we've got what we've got. And we'll have to go forward with that. And, you know, after I get up and get us some water this time, instead of more champagne, because I think I've had enough, but I want to go over a few more races with you.
Well, I'm happy to do it with you.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com, Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, the truth behind the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's the truth behind the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police at Amazon.com. Well, you know, Lynn, what I'd like to talk about is the implications of this election to the American people. Now, I know we're very happy about, you know, getting the Senate, keeping the Senate, and actually we made some very, very nice gains in the Senate, which is going to carry us forward when we get new Supreme Court nominees. I just don't think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to last another couple of years. She always looks very sickly to me. I feel bad about that, but that's just a fact of the matter. And obviously that's a Senate process. But what bothers me is that we did not make gains in the House of Representatives. As a matter of fact, we've lost the House of Representatives. So that's now democratically controlled. And what the American people have, I think, expressed, especially in the Senate races, is that they want more of the results and not resistance. But already the mainstream media is talking about, now that the Democrats control the House, they are going to bring forth new investigations against the Trump administration, and that is going to retard our progress. That is the resistance movement. It is not unifying this country.
I don't see that they will be unifying this country. One can hope that some of these newer congressmen and women that are coming aboard will perhaps be more likely to work together with Republicans. But I kind of doubt that. And I do think, as you said, it's going to be an obstructionist Congress. If you're going to put Nancy Pelosi back in, don't know if that's going to happen. But she's somebody that, you know, has been very outspoken against President Trump and every single thing he's tried to do. And you're going to put people in charge of committees like a Maxine Waters, who is said to be going to be in charge of
the House Finance Committee.
Are you kidding me? This is a person who has a record of financial mismanagement in her own life.
I'll just say corruption. Yeah. It's more than financial mismanagement.
I was being polite there.
Well, I know, but you know, let's call it what it is. Here's a woman that is a congresswoman, has been in office since Christ was a corporal, and in a very, very impoverished entitlement area where minorities make up about 98% of her constituents, and they have climbed, I mean seriously climbed, with jobs and personal growth and wealth. And what she wants to do is impeach the president of the United States. She is a chief obstructionist. But there's a woman who makes $135,000 a year, but then turns around and pays her daughter out of her campaign fees $600,000 a year. If that's not corruption, I don't know what it is. And when the Democrats say, well, you know, we kicked out a lot of people in the Trump administration, these congressional candidates, and now we're going to seek accountability, that doesn't reconcile with me.
Well, no, it doesn't. And she's part of that swamp that I want drained, but she won her election handily, as we knew she would. So, you know, this is what we have to live with. Now, one thing that you mentioned is that you're worried about this. And, you know, there's a silver lining here from my perspective, and that silver lining is that let them be obstructionists for 2 years. Let them try to do everything that they can to investigate, to obstruct. And in 2 years, when we have the 2020 election, America is going to see that those people did not move the country forward. And I think that it could be a silver lining, because if we had all Republicans in there, then we wouldn't see the contrast, and I think in 2020 people might then think, well, maybe we need a change. The American people like this division of power for some odd reason. They do. So I'm good, because I didn't want to lose the House, but we did. But we retained the Senate, and to me that was really a big one. And we retained a lot of governorships. The Dems made a few inroads, I think 4 or 5 governors. But still, the states that were very important to me, Florida stayed red, Texas stayed red, Ohio stayed red. So these are really important signs to me, and I'm very hopeful that the new people may have a different attitude. Don't think so, but hopeful.
Well, you know, there's still some things up in the air, too, and that'll be resolved, you know, shortly with respect to some of these elections. But again, I see an America that is clearly divided, and it's almost 50-50. So let's go back and talk about these nail biters, all right? Because when I have never, ever seen any type of election where it was like down to the wire within a few thousand votes, 50-50. Right, is just crazy. You would see that in one or two elections across the United States, but you would never see them uniformly like you've seen them uniformly in this election. I'll tell you what, I was on the edge of the couch all night. I'm completely sleep deprived right now. Okay. And yeah. I know I'm going to take a nap.
Well, and even so, there's still some races in dispute, and you know, we'll just have to see where that goes. But yes, this was an anomaly in my lifetime, as far as we've never seen so many races razor thin. And I mean, tenths and hundreds of points,
right.
Hundreds of
votes.
Yeah, votes apart. it's kind of crazy. And it really does speak to how divided we are as a country right now. I don't know what's going to bring us back together. I do know that I like the direction that President Trump has taken us, and despite being just vilified by Hollywood and the media and, you know, having that blockade put in front of you all the time has to be just tiring and exhausting, but he's plugged through it, and he's done his agenda. Now, one thing that I'm worried about with the House, that's going to be a whole lot harder to get financing for our wall. And that's a big deal to me. So we as the American people have to think of alternatives of how to get that wall.
Exactly. Funding sources. And I think there's nobody better than finding funding sources and going around, going under. You know, that's our personal philosophy
sure.
In business. Don't let obstructions get in your way. Go around it, underneath it, through it, or over the top of it. And I think I've never seen anybody better do it than President Trump. And that's why you got to really have a businessman and not a politician as the guy that's, command of your ship, so to speak. So I like that. You know, here's another direction that I really like. We are seeing more, and on both sides of the aisle, we are seeing more veterans becoming involved in politics. And I wanted to point out Michael Waltz, the congressman-elect in the state of Florida. And he's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Green Berets in the United States Army, decided to do his give back and run from congressional seat. And he fought off in the last couple of weeks of his campaign an onslaught of Bloomberg money coming from New York City.
Yeah.
Okay,
Bloomberg and spread that around, didn't he?
And there you go. So that that has been a real theme. Okay, and you were going to talk.
Well, on Saturday Night Live last week, if you remember, Pete Davidson, who just lost his girlfriend Ariana Grande, I think it was.
Right.
He mocked one of our esteemed war heroes, former Navy SEAL Dan Crenshaw. And Dan Crenshaw is in Texas.
That's right. He's a Texican.
And Dan Crenshaw served 5 military deployments. And in his last one...
In Afghanistan.
Yes. He was hit by an IED. And when he woke up in the hospital, he had completely lost his vision, completely lost one eye, completely lost the vision in the other eye. He has since regained his vision in the one eye that he has left. And this guy on Saturday Night Live chose to mock him. And I am so happy to say that he handily won his seat, and he is now a U.S. congressman-elect.
Well, the thing that I like, and it goes across both sides of the aisle because it's extremely healthy, and I'm very optimistic about more veterans being involved in politics, because veterans have truly sacrificed Okay, they're not rich attorneys, you know, that went to private schools and all this stuff and were spoon-fed and, you know, got themselves into political office. That's not give back. That's take away. Because when you think about all the benefits and all the stuff that these guys make in their positions in the Senate and in the Congress, they just take away from the American people. And they really don't give back anything except for rhetoric. So I'm very happy to see more veterans getting involved in on both sides of the aisle, because those are the people that I think really look at America first instead of their political power first. And those are the people in best position to move us forward.
Well, I hope that that's true. Another surprise to me in this election, Ron, was, you know, in California, it's certainly a very blue state, and your vote almost doesn't count in California. But there were some things that surprised me, and that is that the races were closer than I would have anticipated. They still lost. The Republicans still lost, but they were closer. And that's hopeful to me. I don't know that California is going to come back to their senses. I think Gavin Newsom is going to give them a ride for their money. And I think it was a very, very bad decision for them.
I think he's going to be worse than Governor Brown, because I think Gavin Newsom is smarter than Governor Brown, and he's cagier than Governor Brown. And
he's further left than Governor Brown,
way far left than Governor Brown. So I feel very, very bad for the people in California. But like you said, it was a little bit more optimistic. I think Cox, who was the Republican gubernatorial candidate, I think he got about 45% of the vote, maybe 46% of the vote. I'll tell you the truth, I didn't think he was going to get more than 35% of the vote. So he got really, 10, in my mind, he got 10 points more than I thought he was going to get.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how they all knew that, because, you know, since they announced it a minute after the polls closed, I don't even understand that. But either way, you know, I mean, our hope, Ron, for the country is that we continue to move it forward. Just President Trump he's just going to continue his agenda. And it's one thing that's so interesting about President Trump is, boy, he's like a bulldog. He just keeps moving forward through everything. And this guy has had to put up with more garbage than any president in history, for sure. Just more obstructions. And I really, really hope that the House doesn't go in that direction. My fear is that they will. But I still think that we'll be okay. We have 2020 coming up. We're going to see where this country goes in the next 2 years. What President Trump can accomplish. I do think that the House going to the Democrats is going to hurt two big things. It's going to hurt the wall and the funding for the wall, because they're the ones with the purse strings. And it's going to hurt health care, because they are going to obstruct. And, you know, then we have the whole DACA issue as well. But I don't think President Trump won't sign anything that gives amnesty. So, not blanket amnesty, not without something in return. So that's going to be something that's going to be interesting to watch, to see what they do with that.
Well, I think DACA is one issue, but I think if they give some sort of significant amnesty, we are done as conservatives and as a Republican Party. Because, you know, I think that the illegal immigration statistics are way off. You know, because don't forget that under the Obama administration, there was an obstruction in every single area to try to identify illegal aliens in this country and illegal alien crime. I remember having written a couple of articles for America Out Loud and some other national news organizations, and it was so hard for me as a forensic criminologist to try to get to the bottom of the statistics on illegal alien crime. I personally think that there's probably 2 or 3 million more illegal aliens than have been reported.
Amnesty,
and already we have so many states that don't have voter ID, I think that, and here again, I'm sorry to be pessimistic, but I'm just calling it the way I see it. I think that the conservatives and the Republicans are almost going to be done. But I like the fact that President Trump is a fighter. We've never seen anything like it. He has carried some of these politicians on his back. I hope they never forget that. But this has really continued to be a referendum on President Trump and who supports President Trump. I think the politicians going into 2020 had better take a look that they've, you know, you better hitch your wagon to a good, strong leader. And I think in 2020, if the Democrats obstruct instead of moving us forward, instead of working with us to move us forward, I think that we're going to see more of a red takeover back in the House and even more Senate positions that we're going to win.
Well, I'd like to see more conservative media because we need the word out. We have conservative media, obviously, but we need more because the networks are all completely
complicit,
right? And it's just really patently unfair to have such a high percentage of all of your comments about the President of the United States negative. I mean, nobody has that much negativity, so that is so one-sided. So I'd like to see that change. And, you know, I mean, here we are. You know, here we are the day after. We're still here. We're going to get up and go to work as usual. Actually, you and I are going to get up and head out to see our Bucking Bulls. But
got in Vegas.
Yeah. But, you know, life is going to go on, and we're going to get through this. It's not the end of the world. There's definitely some good news to be had. There were some bright spots all over the country. And overall, I think we did okay, Ron.
Well, I think there were some amazing upsets. I was very, very happy. And I don't want you to get the opinion that I'm, you know, depressed over this whole thing. I'm optimistic just like you are. Like I said, I'm disappointed. I think we could have had better candidates on the Republican side. I think there was some mediocrity there. I think some people were kind of asleep at the wheel. And unfortunately, I think Ted Cruz was one of them. To let Beto O'Rourke come in there and basically waylay him until the last couple of weeks. Again, that's a huge money thing. He was infused with over $100 million, and all of it, you know, sort of foreign money, so to speak, meaning not coming from within the state of Texas. And, you know, God bless him, but Cruz managed to pull it out. And I think that's a wake-up call to him. And if he ever has consideration again of running for president, he's got to consider is you've got to be able to hold down your own state significantly, especially if you're a Texican.
Yeah. Well, speaking of holding down your own state, Governor in Wisconsin.
Oh, poor Scott Walker.
He lost his seat by a very razor-thin margin, but still lost it. So, you know, all in all, it was an okay night, not a perfect night last night, but here we go, and we're moving on. And you know what? We have been up for a long time watching all of this, so let's get some sleep.
And God bless America.
God bless America.
And the Republic of Texas.